skies sunny and temperatures reaching into the upper 80s.
Welcome to another edition of the Hey Doc Show. Harold Lasky is both the medical director and a physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, and will be your host for the next half hour. With him is his lovely wife Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT and X-ray tech. Together, they hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Let's start today's show with a few statistics concerning you and your family's health. Now, according to the World Health Organization, in 2016, close to 2 billion people aged 18 and older were overweight. Now, of these, over 650 million adults were considered to be obese.
This means that almost 40% of adults aged 18 years and over were overweight.
Well then, how about obesity? Around 13% of the world's adult population, more women than men, were obese in 2016. So if we look at the rise of obesity worldwide, the prevalence of obesity nearly tripled in that 40-year time period. Over 340 million children and adolescents aged 5 to 19 were overweight or obese in that same year's statistics, 2016.
The prevalence of overweight and obesity among children and adolescents aged 5 to 19 has risen dramatically from just 4% in 1975 to just over 18% in 2016.
This rise has occurred similarly among both boys and girls. And in 2016, 18% of girls and 19% of boys were overweight. Now, while just under 1% of children and adolescents aged 5 to 19 were obese in 1975, more than 124 million children and adults, and that's 7%, were obese.
While we normally think that malnutrition is a large cause of infant deaths worldwide, actually overweight and obesity are linked to more deaths worldwide than underweight.
So you could say that obesity is a common condition, and that would still be an understatement. Many patients see the physician and are surprised when they're told that they are overweight, and even more so when the doctor says that they are at risk due to their obesity. So how do we define the two terms, overweight and obesity?
Most often physicians use the term body mass index, or BMI, to determine when someone is to be considered overweight.
In general, a person with a BMI of 25 to 29.9 is considered overweight, while a person with a BMI over 30 is considered obese. Now, obesity is not only defined by the numbers that we just gave you, but by the damage that can be caused to your health when excess body fat has accumulated. There are many diseases that are affected or caused by obesity, both directly and indirectly.
These include cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, obstructive sleep apnea, certain types of cancer, and osteoarthritis.
Also, a high BMI can be a marker of risk, even if it's not proven to be a direct cause, for diseases caused by diet, physical activity, and even environmental factors. How about depression? Well, in this case, it could be either a cause or can be caused by obesity.
There are many socioeconomic and environmental causes of obesity, such as diet, physical activity, automation, urbanization, genetics, susceptibility, medications, mental disorders, economic policies, endocrine disorders, and exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals.
It's one of the most common New Year's resolutions, as many people promise to go on a diet and do more exercise as soon as the new year passes. And although many are successful in obtaining the weight loss initially, research does show that maintaining that weight loss over the long term, it just proves to be rare. Now you may ask why. Why is it so hard to keep that weight down? The reasons for this weight cycling are not very well understood, but we're getting to that understanding.
Truly, the reasons can include the ill effects of decreased energy expenditure combined with increased biological urge to eat during and after caloric restriction.
For any program of weight loss to be successful, many factors must be taken into account. Now, these really include interventions at community, family, and individual levels. We all know that changes to diet and exercising are the main treatments recommended by healthcare professionals. As far as diet is concerned, the quality of the foods consumed can be improved by reducing the consumption of what are called energy-dense foods.
These include those foods high in fat or sugars. You can also improve your chance of losing weight by increasing the intake of dietary fiber. Unfortunately, studies have found an inverse relationship between energy density and energy costs of foods in the developed nations.
Now let's try to explain that. Low-income populations are more likely to live in neighborhoods that are considered food deserts or food swamps, where nutritional groceries are less available.
We all know, and many of you have probably tried using medications along with a suitable diet to reduce appetite or decrease fat absorption.
However, if diet, exercise, and medication are not effective, a gastric balloon or surgery may be performed to reduce stomach volume or length of the intestines, leading to feeling full earlier or a reduced ability to absorb nutrients from foods. Obesity is truly the leading preventable cause of death worldwide.
Did you know that in times past, obesity was seen as a symbol of wealth? Just look at the paintings of the past kings, queens, and other world rulers. Many are plain obese.
And obesity has been found to reduce life expectancy. Relative risk of death over 10 years in white people who have never smoked in the United States by BMI. The BMI range of 22.5 to 24.9 is set as a reference here. So many literature reviews have found that mortality risk is lowest at a BMI of 20 to 25 in non-smokers and 24 to 27 in current smokers.
On average, obesity reduces life expectancy by 6 to 7 years, with a BMI of 30 to 35 reducing life expectancy by 2 to 4 years, while severe obesity with a BMI over 40 reducing life expectancy by 10 years.
But we cannot just speak of death due to obesity. There's also the morbidity problem, because obesity increases the risk of many physical and mental conditions. As we stated before, the CDC has found that obesity is the single strongest risk factor for severe COVID-19 illness. Now, you heard me right. We're now talking about COVID-19. Now, that's a timely finding, of course. One of the biggest links with obesity is the one with diabetes. So just what does obesity do to the body?
Well, you could put these effects into two broad categories, those attributable to the effects of increased fat mass like osteoarthritis, obstructive sleep apnea, and social stigmatization, and those due to the increased number of fat cells.
This is the case in diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular disease, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The reason is that increases in body fat alter the body's response to insulin, potentially leading to something called insulin resistance. Increased fat also creates a pro-inflammatory state and a pro-thrombotic state, leading to blood clots.
But hold your hats. There is something called the obesity survival paradox, which was first described in 1999, that occurs in some overweight and obese people undergoing hemodialysis, as well as in some patients with heart failure and peripheral artery disease.
In people with heart failure, those with a BMI between 30 and 35 had lower mortality than those with a normal weight. Now, this has been attributed to the fact that people often lose weight as they become progressively more ill. Even after cardiac bypass surgery, no increase in mortality is seen in the overweight and obese. One study found that the improved survival could be explained by the more aggressive treatment obese people receive after a cardiac event. Now, one explanation of obesity is concerned with the carbohydrate insulin model, with the consumption of what they call processed high glycemic load carbohydrates, which produce hormonal changes that promote caloric deposition in fat tissue. They exacerbate hunger and they lower that energy expenditure. There's also another explanation of obesity where it is thought that obesity is caused by a combination of excessive food energy intake and a lack of physical activity as the cause of most cases of obesity.
But many believe that the increasing rates of obesity at a societal level are due to an easily accessible and palatable diet, increased reliance on cars and mechanized manufacturing.
One study in the mid-2000s identified 10 other possible contributors to the recent increase of obesity, including insufficient sleep, endocrine disruptors like environmental pollutants that interfere with lipid or fat metabolism, decreased variability in ambient temperatures, decreased rates of smoking because smoking suppresses appetite, increased use of medications that can cause weight gain, such as some of the antipsychotic medicines, proportional increases in ethnic and age groups that tend to be heavier, pregnancy at a later age, which can actually cause susceptibility to obesity in children, and epigenetic risk factors passed on genetics with natural selection for higher BMI and a sort of mating leading to increased concentration of obesity risk factors. That was one long single breath there.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Dr. Lasky has been the director and physician at the care center for over 34 years. They are located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection, between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. They will treat your pain, sprains, and strains. Dr. Lasky and Carmen are proud to welcome Dr. Pollan, a board-certified pain management physician, to the practice. The office emphasizes the treatment of chronic pain. They also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any question about Southside Medical Center, please call their office at 641-4411. That's Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care.
From the early 1970s to the late 1990s, the average food energy available per person per day was less than it is today. In other words, the amount of food bought was decreased.
As societies become increasingly reliant on energy-dense, big portions and fast food meals, the association between fast food consumption and obesity just is becoming more and more concerning. In the United States alone, consumption of fast food meals tripled, and food energy intake from these meals quadrupled between 1977 and 1995. Agricultural policy and techniques in the United States and Europe have led to lower food prices, and in the United States, subsidization of corn, soy, wheat, and rice through the U.S. Farm Bill have made the main sources of processed food cheap compared to fruits and vegetables.
Of course, you may already have suspected or even known that obese people consistently underreport their food consumption as compared to people of a normal weight.
A sedentary lifestyle plays a significant role in obesity. Well, that appears to be a no-brainer. This is primarily due to increasing use of mechanized transportation and a greater prevalence of labor-saving technology in the home. People around the world are taking up less active recreational pursuits as well.
In both children and adults, there is an association between television viewing time and the risk of obesity. More no-brainers.
Unless, of course, you're watching exercise programs on TV. But you gotta be participating for it to have a beneficial effect. The saying, I do a lot of exercise daily, watching others run and work out, that doesn't work. But these things are not the only causes, and genetics does play a part in all of it.
As of 2006, more than 41 of these sites on the human genome have been linked to the development of obesity when a favorable environment is present.
In fact, people with two copies of what's called the FTO gene, which really stands for Fat Mass and Obesity Associated Gene, have been found on average to weigh 3 to 4 kilos more and have a 1.67-fold greater risk of obesity compared with those without the risk gene. The differences in BMI between people that are due to genetics varies depending on the population examined, and that can be from 6% to, listen to this, 85%. Even if specific genes have not been definitively found to code for obesity, an inheritance pattern has been found that 80% of the offspring of two obese parents were also obese, in contrast to less than 10% of the offspring of two parents who were of normal weight.
The so-called Drifty gene hypothesis postulates that due to dietary scarcity during human evolution, people are prone to obesity.
What they're talking about here is the ability to take advantage of rare periods of abundance by storing energy as fat that would be advantageous during times of varying food availability, and individuals with greater adipose or fat reserves would be more likely to survive famine. But this tendency to store fat would be maladaptive in societies with stable food supplies.
They have also found that certain physical and mental illnesses and the pharmaceutical substances used to treat them, which can increase risk of obesity.
Did you know that obesity is not regarded as a psychiatric disorder? But the risk of overweight and obesity is higher in patients with psychiatric disorders than in persons without them. Certain medications can cause weight gain or changes in body composition, and these include insulin, sulfonylureas, some antipsychotic medicines, antidepressants, steroids, certain anticonvulsants like phentoine and valproate, pizotifen, and some forms of hormonal contraception.
Many balk at stopping smoking because they know that this may cause weight gain. In fact, those people who quit smoking gain an average 10 pounds over 10 years.
Remember the gut flora or gut bacteria that we've talked about on past shows? There is an indication that gut flora can affect the metabolic potential, which gives a greater capacity to harvest energy, and that can contribute to obesity. The use of antibiotics among children has also been associated with obesity, but later in life.
Is there an association between viruses and obesity? This is one thing that has not been studied enough in order to determine whether or not the presence of viruses has an effect on obesity.
Well, there are other factors which we touched on briefly. Remember that lack of sleep can affect your weight? Some researchers have shown that there is an association between short duration of sleep and obesity. The question here is, which causes which?
Some personality disorders also have a possible link to obesity, such as neuroticism, impulsivity, and sensitivity to reward. These are more common in people who are obese.
And also remember, loneliness is a risk factor. At the biological level, there are many possible links to obesity. Now, this field of research has been almost unapproached until the leptin gene was discovered in 1994 by J.M. Friedman's laboratory. However, while leptin and ghrelin are produced peripherally, they control appetite through their actions on the central nervous system within our bodies.
In particular, they and other appetite-related hormones act on the area of the brain called the hypothalamus. This is the central area concerned with the regulation of food intake and energy expenditure.
There are several circuits within the hypothalamus that contribute to its role in integrating appetite. First of all, there's something called the melanocortin pathway. Here, the circuit begins with an area of the hypothalamus called the arcuate nucleus. Now, this part of the brain sends signal outputs to the lateral hypothalamus as well as the ventromedial hypothalamus, which are the brain's feeding and satiating centers. A deficiency of leptin signaling either through actual leptin deficiency or now something called leptin resistance, seems to lead to overfeeding and may account for some genetic as well as acquired forms of obesity. And now getting back to the WHO, the World Health Organization, where we started the discussion, predicts now that overweight and obesity may soon replace the more traditional public health concerns, such as undernutrition and infectious diseases, as the most significant cause of poor health.
Solutions will probably involve looking at changing the factors that causes excess food energy consumption and inhibit physical activity.
The main treatment for obesity consists of weight loss through calorie-restricted dieting and physical exercise. Dieting as part of the lifestyle change does produce sustained weight loss, despite slow weight regain over time. Intermittent fasting has, well, no additional benefits of weight loss compared to continuous energy restriction. So several low-calorie diets are effective. But in the short term, low-carbohydrate diets appear better than low-fat diets for weight loss. Also in the long term, all types of low-carbohydrate and low-fat diets appear equally beneficial.
The Mediterranean diet is still considered one of the better diets among the obese, which can also lower the risk of heart disease.
And don't forget, decreased intake of sweet drinks. Now, here's what a lot of you have been waiting for, and that is our list of the top five medicines to help with weight loss for long-term use. Now, these include orlistat, lorcaserin, liraglutide, phentermine, topiramate, and naltrexone, bupropion. The most effective treatment for obesity, though, is bariatric surgery.
The types of procedures include laparoscopy, adjustable gastric binding, rule-in white gastric bypass, vertical sleeve, gastrectomy, and biliopancreatic diversion.
Surgery for severe obesity is associated with long-term weight loss, improvement in obesity-related conditions, and decreased overall mortality. However, improved metabolic health results from the weight loss, not the surgery itself.
One study found a weight loss of between 14% and 25% depending on the type of procedure performed at 10 years and a 29% reduction in all-cause mortality when compared to standard weight loss measures.
Unfortunately, complications occur in about 17% of cases, and the reoperation is needed in 7% of cases. In the U.S. alone, in 2005, the medical costs attributable to obesity in the U.S. were about $190 billion, or 20.6% of all medical expenditures.
This entire discussion stems from our reading of a particular article this week titled The Ketone Brain Connection with Obesity.
Treatments can alleviate impaired glucose tolerance and lower high blood glucose levels may play an essential role in improving brain health in people with obesity. The ketone body is synthesized in the liver, and it is a vital energy source when the body's energy needs exceed its glucose supply. When does this occur? Well, it usually occurs during starvation, but it can also occur during absence of carbohydrate intake or extended exercise.
This study led researchers at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan in Canada to study the effects of ketone supplementation on brain function in people with obesity.
The lead author of the study was Dr. Jeremy Walsh, a PhD and an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada.
He stated that they infused the ketone bodies with the result rapid increases in brain blood flow and alteration in brain metabolism.
According to Dr. Walsh, the ketones may have therapeutic benefits for people who are at an elevated risk of problems with cognitive function.
He stated that these supplements are safe for human consumption and demonstrated potential positive therapeutic effects on aspects of brain health in people with obesity.
The total number of reported COVID cases in the United States since the beginning of the reporting has been around 44 million, with over 700,000 total deaths attributed to COVID. More on COVID on our next show. Yeah.
We would like you, our listeners, to know that Dr. Lasky is one of only a few physicians in the Jacksonville area that has been certified to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call their office at 641-4411. They have also set up a special website at www.compassionatecarejax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.